This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Linda Wertheimer. Dale Bumpers served 24 years in the United States Senate, a Democrat from Arkansas. Before that, he was Arkansas's governor for 4 years. He's written a biography which begins with his boyhood, a hardscrabble life in a tiny town in western Arkansas, and ends with his hour-long speech to the Senate, the man who made the closing argument for the defense in the impeachment trial of President Bill Clinton. With gentle jokes and all the eloquence of a long line of senators from the South, Senator Bumpers, who had retired just weeks before, reminded his colleagues that they could not overturn an American election because a man had been unfaithful to his wife. "Ponder this," he said.
"If high crimes and misdemeanors was taken from English law by George Mason, which listed high crimes and misdemeanors as political offenses against the state, what are we doing here? If, as Hamilton said, it had to be a crime against society or a breach of the public trust, what are we doing here?"
In the end, they saw it your way, Senator Bumpers.
They did.
Senator Bumpers is with us in the studio. Your book is called The Best Lawyer in a One-Lawyer Town, a Memoir.
You think that's a clever title?
The one-lawyer town is Charleston, Arkansas. Could you sort of give us a couple of sentences, describe it for us?
Well, Charleston was just like the other 26 Charlestons in America. They were all, with minor exceptions, small towns. Poverty was so deep-seated, you'd never get over it. It is the most indelible memories of all.
You mean not having shoes where the tops were sewn to the soles or overalls where the clips would hold the little strap?
Linda, I'll tell you an interesting story. While I was writing about how my shoe soles flapped away from the shoes and how our old Maytag wringer washer stretched out the snaps on the bibs of my overalls and how the bib was always hanging down and my shoes were always flapping, as I wrote that, I thought, you know, nobody will believe that. And lo and behold, as I began to look for pictures to put in the book, Betty found a picture. She was in the second grade, but the first and second grades were
Your
sort
wife,
of...
Betty.
They were, yeah, my wife, Betty. She found a picture, which was half second grade where she was, and all of the first grade. I'm sitting on the front row, and lo and behold, the sole of my shoe is at least an inch away from the top of my shoe, and my bib is hanging down. So I was I was validated.
You single out two people who you say made you what you are today, your dad and Miss Dahl.
My father took me to see Franklin Roosevelt when I was 12 years old, and I recognized that there was something wrong with him. His son Jimmy was holding him up, obviously. And so I pulled on my father's coat sleeve, and I said, "Dad, what's wrong with him?" He said, "I'll tell you later." And so on the way home, Dad said, "I'm going to tell you boys what's wrong with Franklin Roosevelt. He can't even walk. He had polio when he was 39 years old. And you boys should take a lesson from that. If a man can be president and can't even walk and has to wear 12 pounds of steel braces around his legs, you have good minds and good bodies, then there isn't any reason why you can't be president." Well, that was a defining moment with me.
But you took him seriously.
It wasn't until 1988 that I thought he was wrong.
After you tried it a couple
That's
of times.
Right. The other moment that you mentioned was my teacher, and every person listening to this radio program knows that there were one or two teachers in their lives who had a great impression on them, and Miss Dahl was mine. She was a spinster, had to turn her whole body to turn her head because she'd been dropped as a child, and we were reading the great English poem Beowulf. And when it came my time to read, Miss Dahl didn't stop me, and I just kept reading. And finally, I stopped, and I looked up, and Miss Dahl had that pencil in her mouth, which she always did have, just to her lips. And she looked at me, and she paused, and she said, "Doesn't he have a beautiful voice?" And she said, "Doesn't he read beautifully? And wouldn't it be a tragedy if he didn't use those talents?" I used to say my critics thought she overdid it.
When you came to the Senate, what did you feel you stood for? What did you want to do?
For 24 years, every time I ran, I had to face that charge that he talks like a conservative in Arkansas and votes like a liberal in Washington. And, you know, I have to tell you, or he votes more like Ted Kennedy than anybody else in the Senate. While that troubled me a little bit, I never had any problem confronting that. What I came to the Senate for was because I believed that when you talk about the great American dream, I think too many people consider the great American dream making a lot of money. And I had gone to school on the GI Bill. And I wanted the great American dream to be to make this a stronger country. And I used to use the illustration of the GI Bill, which I considered one of the, next to Social Security and Medicare, the greatest domestic accomplishment of the 20th century to be the GI Bill. 1.5 million men and women, mostly men, got college educations, most of whom would not have gotten an education otherwise. And you ask your audience, do you think we're stronger as a result of providing 1.5 million men and women a college education? Well, of course they do. Or do you think that we're better off if we provide elderly people with health care so they don't have to choose between, I'm sort of going forward with that, but I'm just talking about the kinds of issues that I cared about. I wanted to save our national forest. I wanted to save our national parks. The environment, that we preserved everything that was good for our children. And when you reach down to pull up somebody at the bottom of the ladder and you're at the top, you do it because it makes him stronger, makes you a better person, makes the country stronger. Not because I'm a liberal, not because I want to spend your tax money, but because that's the very basis of the strength of the nation.
Why did you agree to defend President Clinton? You made the closing argument in the impeachment trial. Everybody understood when you walked into that room that it really was hanging in the balance. It was there were a lot of people who hadn't made up their minds what they wanted to do.
I did it because I was appalled by the whole process. But when President Clinton called me and asked me to do it, I didn't want to do it, and told him, everybody knows we're from the same state. Everybody knows that we've been friends for 25 years. We've been together hundreds of times. I don't think I'm credible. He said, I think that's the very reason you are credible.
I wrote about that day when on the piece that we did that you wore your gray hair long and your responsibilities lightly because you did occasionally say things that made the senators laugh. I quoted one of them. You were, again, making the point that what the president did was not high crimes and misdemeanors.
It was a breach of his marriage vows. It was a breach of his family trust. It is a sex scandal. H.L. Mencken said one time, when you hear somebody say, this is not about money, it's about money. And when you hear somebody say, this is not about sex, it's about sex.
Do you think this is what people will remember you for?
I'm flattered, and never a day goes by that somebody doesn't stop me on the street and talk about the impeachment speech. And I'm immensely flattered that after 4 years, people still remember it and are wanting to talk about it. But it is not really what I hope my legacy will be. I served 24 years in the Senate before I delivered that speech.
You know, you said in the book that on the day that you delivered that speech, you especially missed seeing two people in the gallery who you would have wished could have watched that day.
I can't talk about that without choking up, Linda. I'm going to have to pass on that. Of course, my father was one of them.
And your schoolteacher, Miss Dahl.
Miss Dahl. What that would have meant to me for them to be in the gallery.
Senator Dale Bumper's memoir is called The Best Lawyer in a One-Lawyer Town. He joined us in our Washington studios. Senator Bumpers, thank you very much.
Thank you for inviting me, Linda. I've enjoyed it.
To hear more from Senator Bumpers, visit our website at npr.org.